You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Now, Interstate Batteries has thousands upon thousands of retail locations throughout the United States, and they have an awesome website, interstatebatteries.com, that will allow you to do your own research on a variety of batteries that they offer. I mean, these guys are responsible for tens of thousands of batteries, and these guys are very knowledgeable about batteries because it is what they do, right? Interstate Batteries, right? So if you have any questions about specific batteries, you can go visit their website, interstatebatteries.com. Or you can visit one of their thousands upon thousands of retail locations in the United States and talk with one of their battery experts. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have an epic story, an epic hunting story. You know, a while ago on social media, I reached out and I said, who's got a really kick-ass story for me? And today we have a returning guest, actually. I talked with a gentleman named Chad Yingling earlier about some things on a previous podcast, but he responded back. He's like, hey man, I got a really kick-ass story for you. And so I did the interview, and I know this is a bold statement, but I'm gonna say this is probably one of my top 10, top 5, maybe even favorite podcasts that I've ever recorded. And the reason is because there's power behind this, right? This podcast makes us realize that there is much more to hunting than big antlers, much more to hunting than, you know, all the hype behind. You got to have, you know, you got to shoot it with a bow. It can't be a gun. It can't be a crossbow. You got to do it on public ground. You got to do it on, you know, you got to plant food plots. Like, there's all this stuff that goes into hunting that really doesn't matter. And today's podcast is a perfect example of that. And I'm not going to give any insight into what this podcast or what this story is going to be about. You're going to have to listen to it. And I'm telling you right now, it is powerful. That's the only way I can really explain it. So please listen through the entire podcast, and I'd love to hear your feedback on it. Before we get into today's podcast, though, as always, we got to do a commercial, right? And so for the past couple years, we've done this special with Lone Wolf, right? So if you go to lonewolfhuntingproducts.com/9fingers, that's the number 9 followed by the word fingers, lonewolfhuntingproducts.com/9fingers. You enter in your first name, your last name, your email address, then you confirm your email address. And what this does is it enters you into a giveaway, right? And I think July 1st is actually the first giveaway that we do. So I'll pick an email address at random. And guess what? You're the winner of your choice of stand or sticks. And it's just really kick-ass giveaway, right? But here's the best part. When you enter in your information, it kicks back to you a discount code that you can use for their online purchase of a Lone Wolf, right? And I'm not going to tell you what that is, right? You're going to have to enter in your information and hit submit, and then it automatically kicks back and it automatically kicks back the information for you now, or the discount code for you. And what that discount code does, it allows you to save $50 off of all orders over $200, I think. So it's like $199.99, right? So basically, if you buy a tree stand, you're getting $50 off the purchase of that tree stand. And that's a really good, really good discount, especially for one of the greatest tree stands on the market, made in America. Very high quality, very quiet, very mobile, you know, all these things that I always talk about with Lone Wolf. But so go take advantage of that. lonewolfhuntingproducts.com/9fingers. That's the number 9 followed by the word fingers, and go enter today to win. Other than that, we're done with all the intro stuff. Let's get into today's epic story. I guess we're going to call this kind of the epic story sessions, the series that we're doing here on the Nine Finger Chronicles. And hopefully you guys enjoy it. go to Facebook, go to Instagram. I want to hear your feedback on this, and let me know what you think. So without further ado, here's Chad Yuengling with an epic story. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Chad Yuengling again. I think this is the second time you've been on.
Number two, man.
Welcome to the Two Timers Club.
Thanks. I feel very, very prestigious.
If you tell people that, it will get you absolutely nothing in life.
I was figuring I was going to be getting like discounts at places, autographs, you know.
Nope. Nobody cares.
there's no Nine Finger Chronicle groupies. I mean,
there might be a couple. There might be a couple. Cool. So I put a message out on Facebook. I'm like, hey man, I want to hear some kick-ass hunting stories. And you reached out to me with the kind of the Cliff Notes version of one that I felt was amazing. And I think how we get into this story is how we remind people of where you live and what do you do for a living.
So I live in West Central Illinois. And at the time of this story, I was a home care nurse, registered nurse. I travel around the rural community and take care of patients in their home with different diseases and just try to heal them and keep them out of the hospital. So,
gotcha. So what year does this story take place in?
This was in 2016.
Okay, 2016. And have you changed positions or career path since then?
I actually, my last day as a registered nurse was this past Thursday.
Oh, okay. Now what are you doing?
I am going to be getting into insurance sales. Gotcha. And when I get that under my belt, then I plan on getting my real estate license as well.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So we're talking about a story that takes place in 2016 when you were a in-home care provider. All right. Why don't you go ahead and just kick this story off and I'll jump in with questions along the way.
Okay. So, I got a referral to go see a patient in a little town of Paloma, Illinois. Which is just outside of Quincy. And by the way, I do have the family's permission to use this guy's name. So, so I got a referral, on this gentleman. He had esophageal cancer, and had surgery to fix it or to remove a tumor. And so I came into the home to do my initial visit. And when I walk in, there's deer racks everywhere and guns everywhere. And I'm immediately thinking, this is going to be awesome. Yeah. I'm going to get along great with this guy. So it might scare most nurses, but for me, it's like, yep, this is a done deal. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
So, so I take care of this patient, starting in, it would have been late spring, early summer. And, I'm taking care of him, working on, getting his incisions healed up, you know, making sure he's able to eat well. And I made him a deal at that time, that if he could get healed up and get back on his feet, that he could, come out to my place and go dove hunting with me. And, so I don't know, 2-3 months go by and he actually gets the news that cancer's gone. No signs of cancer anywhere. And, so September 1st rolls around and he comes out to my house and gets his, a dove hunt in and gets his limit within like the first hour.
Yeah.
And just had an absolute blast. But, after the hunt was done, he told me that morning that he had a fall, said he just got dizzy and fell down. And, I said, told him, you know, if any of that stuff continues, you know, you need to get evaluated by his physician. And then, so the next week I go to make a visit with him and, he says, well, I, ended up following up with my doctor, and they did some imaging, and the cancer was back all in his brain and his spine.
Man.
So,
well, before you go move forward on this, when you were first introduced to him, you walked in to his house and you saw all the deer racks and you saw the guns. Was it easy to start up a conversation with him? And the reason I ask is because sometimes people like that have just a lot of real negative energy, not because of who they are, but because of the illness itself. And they're down and they don't want to talk to anybody. You walk in there, you go, oh, I'm going to get along great with this guy. But did this guy care if you liked guns and hunting and all that stuff?
It led into us, Dan, being really, really good friends. I would do my professional duties while I was there, you know, get his vital signs, change dressings, and make sure everything was okay. And then we would just end up sitting and talking for, you know, an hour or more and about anything and everything. I mean, he was a big coyote hunter. He was a huge deer hunter. Avid crappie fisherman. I mean, he was an outdoors guy.
Yeah.
And, and he liked taking kids out and doing that stuff, to get kids out in the outdoors. And he, he was just a great guy. And, I'd share some of my stories too. And, at that time, summertime, I was doing some summer projects and stuff to get ready for deer season. And he was just, all about it. I use that when I have common ground with somebody like that, I'll use it to get their mind off things for a while.
Yeah.
And, so they don't have to think, just sit there and dwell on, cancer. We can sit there and bullshit like two guys at a bar, just, about deer stories and hunting stories. So,
yeah. So how old was he at this point when you were first introduced to him?
He would have been in his late 60s, early 70s.
Okay. Late 60s, early 70s. And then, so as you, it sounds to me like you guys came really good friends. He kind of came back with the negative, hey, it's negative. You got a clean bill of health, come out. He follows up with his doctor and, you get some news that, obviously is not good.
Yep. So he ended up being diagnosed, had cancer in his brain and his spine. And at that point, basically, they told him that it was, a terminal diagnosis, that really wasn't much they could do. So I continued seeing him for a while, a couple times a week. And then it came time to where I had to have the conversation with him and his family on end of life care. It's never an easy conversation to have with people, but, through the relationship that I had built with him over the previous, few months, on our common love for hunting and the outdoors and everything, it made it easier. And, I think he wasn't looking at me as just another healthcare professional that was, taking care of me. He looked at me as a, valued friend.
Yeah.
How
fast from the time he was re-diagnosed to the point where the doctor says, this is now become terminal?
Let's see, that would have been towards the end of summer. It would have been only probably a month or so.
Oh, so it came back and it came back hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he probably had it while he had the other, and just didn't know about it. And it just finally started to manifest symptoms.
Was there any radiation involved? Did they do chemo treatments and stuff like that?
Yeah. He had done chemo and radiation and all that stuff, and had, actually shrunk the tumor down with radiation to have it removed.
Got you.
So, yeah. And then the one thing he was really worried about, he had a port in for his chemotherapy, and it got infected while he was in the hospital. And so I had to do packing. They removed it, and I had to do packing to that wound to get it healed. And he was concerned because that was his right shoulder. You know, that's the gun that, or that's the shoulder that he, you know, uses to shoulder his gun. So
okay,
that was when I made him a deal. I was like, we get this healed up and you do good, you know, well, I'll have you out for a dove hunt.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha. All right. So he gets the bad news, and what happens next?
So he gets the bad news, and I, like I said, continued seeing him for a while, and it got to where we needed to talk about end of life care. Right. So I actually ended up getting him enrolled in hospice care, which is an awesome program. I had to discharge him from my services though, because my goal is to get people better and, you know, yeah, get them to progress. But, so I got him discharged and enrolled into hospice care. But I still, every time I was through there, you know, I was stopping in and seeing him just to visit and say, hey, and keep him up to date on what was going on, you know, in my deer hunting, work and stuff that I was doing.
Yeah.
But it started getting into, you know, the actual deer season, bow season. And I kept, you know, coming by every time, and I'd update him, tell him, you know, what I'd seen and what I'd hunted over, and just, you know, go over the whole story and my setups and what I was doing. And he just loved talking about that stuff.
Yeah. So as a professional, you're supposed to maintain a professional, you know, approach to this, right? You got to try your hardest not to let emotions take over and stuff like that. How hard was it for you as not only a professional healthcare provider, but also now as a friend, watching someone who started off as just another patient, you know, but, you know, he becomes a friend now. How hard was it to see this deterioration, I guess you would say?
It's really hard, man. You know, it takes a special kind of person, I guess, to be a healthcare worker, because you can't go into it just looking at it, you know, this is just my job and this is just what I do and I clock out and clock in. You know, it's, you know, when I'm taking care of somebody, you know, I'm, of course, doing my professional duties, but I'm also looking to try and find a way to relate to them.
Right.
You know, you're coming into somebody's house when they're at an extremely vulnerable point in their life, and you got to gain their trust, build a relationship with them that's going to make it easy for you to, you know, do your job and provide them the best care you can.
Yeah.
And just build that relationship with them.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That was tough. And, you know, I'm sure doing what it is that you did, right? I mean, this wasn't your first rodeo, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure you had other scenarios that went down just like this guy went down, but not, I guess, gain a friendship out of it.
Before I did home care, I did 8.5 years of critical care, and, you know, not everybody makes it out of the hospital. And, you know, I'm multiple times had situations where I had to, you know, talk with families and give them bad news. And, you know, in some cases on patients that didn't have families, literally sit with somebody who was actively dying and hold their hand just so they wouldn't die alone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I've done all that, and, you know, you go through it because you know, and I truly believe that, you know, what I was doing makes a difference and is truly helping that person.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that, let's see, God, I can't, like 3 years now, I think it's been, or 2 years or something like that. It just kind of, it's a blur since my stepmom passed away. She had, cancer of her stomach and ovaries and all that stuff, and she had to go through the same kind of thing, right? The hospice care. And I don't know if there's anything harder, you know, I'm a man here, you know, there's times where men try to act tough, but I don't know if there's anything harder for a man, and I'm speaking for me, than not having control of a situation and watching something go down that you don't want to happen, but you can't control it.
No, it's, I mean, that's the nature of the beast with healthcare. Yeah. I mean, in life in general, I mean, everybody's going to die. That's a given. It's just, we have no control on when and the circumstances. And, that's why you have to live every day like it's your last one. And, you know, you got people in your life, you make sure you tell them you love them, and because you never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely. So did you notice this guy's demeanor change when you popped in to start talking about hunting? I mean, would he light up? Would he pop up from his, like, his slumber, you know, this shroud of darkness that's kind of over top of these people who are dying? When you walk in the room, you're like, hey man, what's up? How you doing? Did he kind of spark up a little bit?
Oh yeah, definitely. He would, I mean, he'd start smiling ear to ear and just, I mean, he kind of start moving around a little more in his recliner, and he got, you could just kind of tell he was excited and kind of amped up to start talking about stuff. So, and his wife and some of his other family, multiple times, you know, after I'd be taking care of him, they'd walk me out and they would, they'd let me know that me being there and getting his mind off that stuff for a while was just a huge, huge help to him. So that was really cool.
Yeah. So move forward with this.
So, the postseason, was going in Illinois, been hunting and just working and, you know, and doing my thing. And, I popped into his house one time. He was on hospice. So I was just seeing him on my own time. And, so I walk into his house, and before I even get sat down, he's like, are you going bow hunting tonight? I said, I doubt it. Said I'm pretty busy today. Doubt if I'll get done early enough to get out in the woods. He's like, oh, you no. He's like, you need to go. He's like, I woke up this morning and said, first thing in my head was that I needed to talk to Chad. I needed to get him. I needed to tell him he needed to go hunting today. And, so I said, well, I was like, I really doubt I'll have time. So, you know, I usually like to get out in the woods about 2:30. It was early October. I think that day was October 13th. And, I mean, he started almost getting mad. He was like, no, you need to go. And he like wouldn't let it go.
Almost like he knew something that you didn't know.
It really was. But he wouldn't let it go. So finally I was like, okay, all right, I'll go. You know, I don't know what time I'll get home, but I said, I'll go. And so I got my phone out and looked at the weather and I said, well, I was like, if I'm going hunting, you're going to pick where I'm going. So I said, we got I think it was like southeast wind or something. And I said, my stand locations for southeast wind. I only got a couple of them. I said, you know, I got one over some fresh cut corn and I got another one over standing beans. I said, so which one should I go to if you're picking? And he's like, oh man. He's like, I've always liked standing beans. So I said, all right, done deal. I'll hunt standing beans tonight. So I went ahead and worked the rest of my day and, I got home something like 4:30 and hurried up and threw my clothes on and drove out to my hunting spot and got up in the stand at like 5:00. I mean, it was late. And I'm sitting there, just kind of got everything set up in the tree, got my bow hung up and was just kind of contemplating, you know, what our conversation was earlier that day. And, had a twig snap behind me. And where I was hunting was on a corner. It had been the south corner of a big, big standing bean field. And it had a bottom, a little creek bottom that ran north and south. And then it had another finger small creek that led up to a pond that was probably 200 yards to the west of me. So I was kind of right in that triangle where that overflow from the pond comes down to that bottom and right on the corner of a bean field that kind of has a ridge that leads down into that little triangle where all that stuff meets together. And so I'm sitting there, hear a twig snap behind me, just kind of turn my head briefly and look, and there was the biggest deer that I had in bow range ever in my life.
No shit.
At that point, standing right there.
How far?
At that time, he was about 40 yards.
Okay, 40 yards.
And so I'm left-handed. The deer was on. He was kind of over my right shoulder. My bow is over my left. So I have to turn all the way around, get my bow, get stood up, and get kind of turned around real, you know, everything real slow. And where the stand is, it's a pretty drastic change in elevation down to where this deer was. He was down in the bottom. And so by the time I get my bow and turn around, I can't see any deer, can't see the deer anymore. And so I'm sitting there and I didn't hear him run off. So I'm like, did I spook him? What's going on? You know, where is he at? And he gets to he must have got to the creek because I could see ripples in the water start flowing out. And I'm like, all right, he's at this deadfall that goes over the creek. It's like he goes under that. He's either going on a 40-yard trail on up to the north, or he's going to take this 20-yard path that kind of goes up the other side of this little creek up into a small bean field. So I sit there, wait, and deer goes under the deadfall. I hear the water start slushing around and see the ripples getting bigger and bigger. And here he comes out on the 20-yard trail.
Holy shit.
Heading right up into this other little bean field.
All right, so hang on.
He goes, yeah.
When this buck steps out, I mean, you're sitting in this tree, right? It's October 13th. It's generally not the best time to go, right? You probably wouldn't have gone hunting that day if it wasn't for him, right?
No, right. I would not have. Not
now,
at all.
When this buck steps out and you see him, what was the first thing that kind of popped into your mind?
It was like utter disbelief. I mean, it's like 78 degrees, October 13th, you know, the quote unquote lull, you know, whatever that is. But so, and here's this just giant, I mean, huge deer. I mean, I was speechless, man. I mean, I couldn't process what was going on almost.
Did at that point, were you like, oh my God, he is not going to believe this, you know, cause whether you shoot this deer or not, you already had an encounter with one of the biggest bucks that you've ever seen in your life. And now you already have a story to tell him.
At that time, I kind of went into like killer mode.
Right. Right. Makes sense.
I wasn't thinking of anything else except, you know, huge deer. I got to get this shot off.
Right.
Now, how do I do it?
Right. Okay.
Because it all happened, you know, I didn't have an opportunity to watch this deer, you know, walk in, you know, this all just started with a twig snap right behind me. And, you know, here's this giant right there, just
right
out of nowhere.
Right.
Just like he appeared like a ghost.
Right. So he's walking through the creek. He picks the 20-yard trail and
crosses the creek, gets up on the other bank, starts to get kind of up elevation, kind of parallel with me. I make a quick little soft mitt. He stops. I had already come to full draw when he was crossing the creek. I make that little grunt. He stops. I smoked him.
Jesus.
Let the arrow go. Just perfect right behind the shoulder. He goes up on up the ridge and then comes back down, just kind of made a little loop up the ridge and then come back down in that bottom. And there's an old woven wire fence down in that bottom. He ran head first right into that woven wire fence and fell over right there.
Holy cow. So from the time you saw him to the time you shot him, how much time had gone by?
It felt like at that time, like an hour, but right. In all actuality, it was probably a minute or two.
Okay. So it happened real fast.
It did happen really fast.
Okay. So when you let the arrow go and you hit him, did you know it was a good shot?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was wide open, perfectly broadside. The grunt stopped him. He didn't spook and just, smoked him right behind the shoulder, probably 2 inches behind the shoulder, maybe 4 inches, 4 to 5 inches, below the bottom part of his body. So
yeah,
that drilled hard shot.
Yeah. So did you realize how big this deer was at the time that you shot him?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I just, from when I first saw him, it was just one of those, giant, holy shit, I got to get my bow. I got to get a shot off this deer. And that was it. I didn't know what he was other than just big and tall.
Yeah. Man, that is nuts. Okay. So at that moment right there, you drilled him and then you watched him go down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then there's this moment that we all have, like, when we're able to shoot a deer and we watch it go down, we know it's a successful hunt. And then it's like we go from kill mode to a different type of mode. What happened as soon as you watched that deer go down?
As soon as he went down, I was just sat there in disbelief for a second. I mean, I was seriously like almost tearing up. It was such a rush of emotion. That it's just like, oh my God, this actually happened.
Yeah.
And it happened. And I watched the deer go down. I mean, there's no question on a trail. And so I got my phone out. I sent a group text to actually my dad and my cousin, which after actually looking at it, after a little bit, it made no sense at all. I didn't hit. No, it was just gibberish.
Not even autocorrect could help it.
No, it was beyond autocorrect repair. So I sent them that message, and then I called Ed, my patient, or former patient, my buddy. I called him up, and I said, Ed, you're not going to believe this. I said, I just smoked the biggest deer of my life. And he starts hooping and hollering. And I mean, it was unbelievable. He starts hooping and hollering and I knew it. Oh, by God, I knew. I just knew it. And he's just going. And then, I mean, we're both hooping and hollering and back and forth. And then he just starts crying and he starts crying. And I started crying and he's just, I mean, it was just an unbelievably powerful moment, between two hunters. It was just, I can't really find words to describe it. It was just so powerful. The emotions that we both shared in that moment.
Yeah.
It was crazy, man. I mean, I'm tearing up right now just talking about it. It's had that much of a lasting effect on me.
Yeah, I can believe it, man. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think the fact that this was such first off, describe this deer. Describe this deer, how big it was, maybe an estimate on age, whatever.
So, like I said, when I shot him, I didn't really realize what it was. I just saw big, tall tines right. and a huge deer. So I go recover it. I actually waited for my dad to get there. He was bow hunting on a different farm. And he came over and we went and recovered the deer. And I told him where it was, and he headed down over the hill before I actually got down there. And all I hear him say is, holy shit.
Yeah.
So you get down there, and it was a 8-pointer with just hugely tall tines.
Yeah.
And he had a 7-inch, I don't know what you want to call it, of either a flyer or drop tine that came off kind of the back of his, where his G2 meets the main beam.
Yeah.
He had a 7-inch flare point that came off the back of his rack there. And then another couple inch tine that came out below one of his brow tines. But he was an old deer. I estimate him, he's probably a 5.5 to 6.5 year old deer.
Yeah. Yeah. And it says here 167 inch gross, basically 8-pointer with some trash.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Now, the reason I ask this is because, do you feel that the size of the antlers of this buck made the moment more powerful?
Nope. Didn't have anything to do with it.
You know what? That is awesome to hear, man. Because I have a feeling that if you would have shot a doe that night, it would have been the same type of moment.
Oh, I would have made the same phone call. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered if it was a button buck. If a deer would have come by that evening, I would have shot it just for the reason that he had a premonition,
yeah.
Or wanted me to go hunting.
Yeah.
It was kind of like he was living vicariously through me, to have that experience.
Right. Right. So, like, I can't help but think, in a moment like this, a guy starts to question different parts of his life, right? I really can't explain what I'm thinking right now, except for there is some kind of natural force or higher power or whatever you believe that was at play that day that made a guy who was is technically on his deathbed to basically get angry with you and force you to go hunting, and then this happens.
I truly believe that God was working in that situation.
Yeah.
He was working in Ed's life at that point, giving him one more rush, one more hunt, if you will, even if it was just, through me, giving him one more experience. That feeling that you get when you shoot a deer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing like it in the world.
Yeah.
And I think he was giving that to him one more time before he would pass away.
Yeah, man. So then when, you get this deer loaded up, were you able to drive over to his house and show him that night yet?
I wasn't that night because it was so hot.
Yeah.
It was almost like 80 degrees.
Yeah.
So I went and I got it hung in my cooler. And then the next day, after work, I went and, skinned it out, got it skinned off the head, skull capped it and boiled the skull. To get it cleaned up. And then I think it was the next day I drove over that evening and took it in, or that afternoon while I was working, I stopped in and showed him the rack and let him hold it and told him, the whole story in person. And somebody can't smile any bigger than what he was doing at that point in time. I mean, he was on cloud nine.
Yeah, man. That is absolutely crazy. What was the conversation like between you at that point?
It was just, you know, reliving the moment, man. Yeah. We're just going through, and he wanted to know, you know, every detail of what happened, and, you know, how, what I was thinking when I, you know, when I saw it, and, you know, how I got my bow and how slow I had to move. And, you know, when I stopped him, did I whistle? Did I grunt? You know, what did I do? And, you know, when I shot him, he wanted to know, you know, exactly where he went, up the ridge, down the ridge. You know, he wanted to know every detail of the story. And, you know, I shared it with him, and then, you know, we just kind of just sit there and stare at that rack, just kind of in awe. And we both just kind of reflected on you know, what had happened. And I told him, you know, well, I said, thank you, Ed, yeah. for directing me, to go hunting that evening and picking where to go. I said, that deer's all you, man. Yeah. So
what did yep. this experience, was there any takeaways from this experience? Was there any, like after something big happens in a person's life, they tend to sit and just reflect on it or think about it and just like play different scenarios in their head. What happened to your thought process, or maybe you as a person, because of this experience?
I mean, it's one of those things that we're not supposed to understand it. I don't think you're just supposed to have faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been very few moments in my life that have had that kind of a lasting effect that, you know, there's definitely something out there. You know, if you're a religious person, which I am, I'm a Christian, and I, you know, I believe in God. But there's definitely something out there that plays a role. And at the right times, you know, you may not, you know, not all your prayers get answered, but at the right time, whenever, you know, God wants to let you know he's there, he will.
Right.
And I really believe that he was using me to give Ed that moment.
Right. Man, that is crazy powerful. Has this changed you as a hunter in any way, shape, or form?
It makes me appreciate every single moment I can get out and hunt. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
You don't know when it's going to be your last time to go.
Yeah.
And to know, you know, just from talking with Ed and, you know, sharing the stories with him, and you could just tell that he wanted to go so bad. He wanted to be able to get out there, and he wanted to be able to do those things and experience the outdoors and just get outside. Didn't matter. You know, if he would shoot anything, he just wanted to be able to do it. And I mean, to see a guy who has that kind of love and passion for the outdoors, for him to know that he's not going to be able to do that anymore, and to know that soon he's going to be passing away.
Yeah.
You know, sharing those moments with him and talking with him about those things, it really made me appreciate being able to go out and do what I do in the outdoors, and to, you know, go hunting with my dad and just enjoy every single time that you do something like that.
Absolutely. How much more time did you have with Ed before it was his time?
That was October 13th. I believe he ended up passing away in December.
Yeah.
So
what was that like for you when you got the news?
It was hard. I mean, it's, you know, I get connected to every patient that I take care of, but, you know, there's every once in a while, there's one that's really special, that you really connect with. And, I actually went when his wife called me and told me, she wanted to make sure that I, you know, attended his visitation, and they actually included me in the family, part of their visitation. So I got to go and show up early, and be with his entire family and actually share that story with them. And so it was, yeah, it was really hard.
Yeah, I can believe it, man. Well, the good thing for you is that, you know, the sun is shining, so to speak, and you have plenty more hunting seasons ahead of you. And I know this is going to be something, you know, just from talking to you outside of this, you know, this podcast, you know, you can take away this story and, you know, I don't know, make the best of the rest of your life. And this is an awesome story for everybody, because I feel when you strip away all the bullshit that is out there in the hunting community, right? We got guys bitching about crossbows, and you guys bitching about high fence hunting, and you got guys bitching about, you know, gun hunting versus bait and all this other stuff. That doesn't matter one tiny bit at all in the grand scheme of things.
Doesn't matter at all, man. It's the fact that you're just able to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's what it boils down to. There's guys out there that I'm sure are, you know, right now in the same situation Ed was, that would give anything to be able to have one more experience, to have one more hunt. And, you know, in the big scheme of things, all this knick-knack bullshit, doesn't matter.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Well, very powerful story, Chad. I really appreciate you coming on again and sharing that with us. And, man, let me be the first to say, well, first let me say, you know, good luck this upcoming season. But I have a feeling that this story will probably get a lot of, I like to, when I sit in and have my quote unquote tree stand time, you know, we do a lot of thinking. I have a feeling that this will be part of your tree stand time thinking for many years to come.
What, another thing to add to that is, a couple weeks after, Ed passed away, his wife called me and, she said, "Hey, if you could swing by the house, there's a couple of things Ed would have needed to have." And, so I went over, after work, and there was a 2-man deer stand that he had, behind his garage under a tarp and stuff. And then a gun cabinet that he had built back in high school.
Oh, wow.
And she said he wanted you to have both of these things.
Wow.
So I have the gun cabinet is in my basement full of guns. And every time I look at it, think of him. And then I took that stand and I got it put up in an unbelievable spot and wrote on it with a Sharpie, the Ed stand. So, I mean, every time I'm in that stand, I mean, it's just kind of like he's right there. He's with me.
Absolutely, man. Awesome. Well, man, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for sharing the story.
So, you're welcome, buddy.
And there you have it, man. If that story doesn't tug at your heartstrings and make you realize what is important in life, and at the same time, how hunting can be such a powerful thing, and the outdoors can be such a powerful thing, and the passion that a lot of us have for the outdoors, man, I don't know. I really enjoyed this story. Very emotional. It, you know, at the end of this podcast, you know, after I hung up the phone with Chad, and I just kind of sit back, right? And you think about all the things that are really important in life. And let's all be honest, man, big antlers are not that. Right? That's for me anyway, big antlers. Yes, I love looking and hunting and trying to kill a deer with big giant antlers, but at the end of the day, something like this, it's not worth it, right? So huge shout out to Chad for taking time out of his day. Huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast: Hunter Safety Systems, Lone Wolf, Ripcord, Wasp, Ozonix Prime. I'm going to keep this short. Go spend some time with your family, right? Hopefully everybody had a great Father's Day. And if you're going to be in a tree, please wear your damn safety harness.